Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com. And your support makes this possible.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
So a family member or friend invites you to a gay wedding. Should you go? That's the question that we'll address and more today on Connecting Faith. Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Ted Ross here. Carissa Rogers at the phones, and we're ready for a great hour ahead.
Yes, indeed. That's a controversial question.
That truly is. And, and we'll get to that with today's guest in a few minutes.
And speaking of controversy, you know, it's all over the news. A lot of the stories are controversial, and today's no exception after the tragic news of another shooting by a white police officer on a black civilian.
His name was Philandro Castile. In St. Paul. And then yesterday, of course, we heard about Alton Sterling in Louisiana, another shooting death. And I think it was just yesterday in the paper, I was looking at the headlines, at 64 shootings in Chicago over the 4th of July weekend.
Oh,
so
goodness.
We are, I mean, not that all those are related, but the fact is we have some big challenges today.
Yeah, a lot of people in pain. And, you know, I think of the verse in Romans talks about weeping with those who weep as Christians. I mean, what's our response? And, you know, it's a controversial issue, but we come alongside and we certainly pray for those involved.
Just thought it's just good to, you know, they're questions beyond our answering at this point, certainly. But our thoughts and prayers are for justice and to remember the family of Philandro and Alton. Remember those families as they grieve today and question and wonder why. And I was looking in Psalm 9 this morning from the New Living Translation, some things to hang on to, even though we don't really fully understand that we wonder why isn't there justice, and there certainly seems to be evidence of injustice. Here's what Psalm 9, verse 7 to 9 says, "But the Lord reigns forever, executing judgment from his throne. He will judge the world with justice and rule the nations with fairness." And verse 9 says, "The Lord is a shelter for the oppressed, a refuge in times of trouble." We can hang on to the fact that there is a day coming when the Lord will rule the world and judge the world with justice. And in the meantime, he is a shelter for the oppressed and a refuge in times of trouble.
It's a good word of hope. And I think, too, when we say for anybody grieving or in the valley in life, we say, "I'll pray for you," and maybe grab hands and pray with them right away. We know there's power in prayer, and that's why we say and do that.
Coming up this Sunday, it's Pray Together Sunday. We've been telling you a little bit about it. The National Association of Evangelicals sponsoring this, looking for millions of believers across the nation to gather in prayer. And here's how they put it. "Americans are divided among many different lines: politics, neighborhoods, school districts, race, socioeconomic status. We tend to surround ourselves with people who are like us, furthering the division. The church can be the place where people come together, but we need God's help. And at the heart of Pray Together Sunday is the belief that Jesus changes everything. Jesus can bring unity where there's division, action where there's apathy, faith where there's unbelief, grace where there is shame, humility where there is pride, hope where there is fear, and love where there is hate." I encourage you to look into and plan to be a part of Pray Together Sunday. This Sunday, you can find out more at nae.net.
Nae.net, just a few days away.
Yeah. We're going to spend some time talking today about messy grace. And it was just a year ago that the Supreme Court determined that gay marriage was the rule of the land, and we're going to address issues like that and hear an amazing story, and I hope that you'll stay tuned. We'll get to that in just a minute.
This is what the debate is really about. For the Colson Center for Christian Worldview, I'm John Stone Street with The Point. In a recent piece at First Thing, Sharif Gurgis connects some dots. A year after Obergefell versus Hodges, he writes, "It's obvious gay marriage was just a stepping stone. So are transgenderism, unfettered abortion access, and all the fights over bathrooms. The real goal is to enshrine in law Justice Kennedy's dictum that liberty means defining our own concept of existence, of meaning, of the universe, of the mystery of human life. In other words, we are who we say we are. Objective creative facts about us, including our bodies, don't matter anymore." Gurgis calls this a new Gnosticism, hearkening back to an ancient heresy that taught that matter is evil or irrelevant. Male, female, mother, father, parent, child, these are categories that no longer matter, maybe not even exist. Against this, Christians proclaim the radical message that our bodies do matter. Gnosticism, new or old, denies reality, but reality has a way of catching up with us. With today's point, I'm John Stone Street.
Categories, gender differences, all those things. That seems to be one of the very hot topics these days. We're going to address it today and particularly hear from a pastor who has really lived through a lot of the story. And you're going to find his story fascinating. I'm anxious to welcome to Connecting Faith Caleb Kaltenbach, who is the lead pastor at Discovery Church in Simi Valley, California. And he speaks widely on faith, reconciliation, and sexual diversity to people on all sides of the LGBT issue. Caleb attended the Talbot School of Theology. He's currently finishing his D.Min at Dallas Sem. And he's written a wonderful book called Messy Grace. And the subtitle sort of gives away the story, at least teases it a bit, how a pastor with gay parents learned to love others without sacrificing conviction. That's a provocative title, and we're looking forward to a conversation with Caleb Kaltenbach. Welcome, Caleb. Good to have you on.
Hey, thank you so much for having me on. It's an honor being here.
You know, I'm wondering if maybe by way of beginning, if we, you know, just maybe help with some, I don't know if the word's definitions or just language, because, you know, it seems like the acronym's getting longer. It was gay, lesbian, now it's LGBT. They've added, you know, more letters. Do we say, when we're talking about these issues, is it right to say, well, we're talking about someone in the LGBT community or someone living in a gay lifestyle, or do we simply say someone is gay?
I don't know that the word lifestyle is good anymore, and I know that nobody means you know, any kind of harm when they say that. But, you know, my story is I grew up in the gay and lesbian community, the LGBT community, because my parents got a divorce and my dad went into a same-sex relationship with several different men. And my mom had a 22-year monogamous same-sex relationship with a woman named Vera. And they were actually on the local board of directors in, for GLAAD in the Kansas City area. And so just watching that community and watching where it is now, the word lifestyle probably isn't the best word because people within the LGBT community, they have all different kinds of lifestyles, just like people, you know, in the Christian community or the Jewish community or, you know, you pick your community. But I think a couple things we should say. Number one, I think we should say LGBT or LGBTQ. I know it's getting longer, and even I think there's two A's at the end now, and the last one stands for ally. But I think referring to the community as the LGBT community is probably the right thing to do. I think also we have to understand that people identify as LGBT in so many different ways, because there are some people who identify as LGBT, but they are not ever going to get into a relationship with somebody of the same gender. There are some people who are transgendered, but they're still, quote unquote, straight. There are some people who, you know, will say that they're same sex attracted, but they are celibate out of biblical conviction. And so I usually use the phrase identify with the LGBT community. And when somebody is in a same sex relationship, I use the phrase life choice. I don't say lifestyle, because I don't think that describes what we're talking about. I think especially, you know, at our church, we have we are non-affirming. We believe that marriage and intimacy is for a man and a woman, you know, and that's how God created it. But we have people who have made the life choice to be in a same-sex relationship who attend our church because they know they are welcome here, that they're accepted, even though we don't approve of this life choice that they're in. We still want them to be able to come and hear the gospel. if that makes sense.
It certainly does. Thanks for just helping us with that, because I think we, well, there's so many things, I guess, about this area that we get hung up on and tripped up on, maybe, and obviously the welcoming and accepting part, that has been a real tension point for many. And maybe just to, you just say a bit about your story, but we'll get into that as we go along. But why would you say, why haven't Christians been maybe kinder or more grace-filled when we're facing this particular concern?
Well, I think I think a couple reasons. Number one, I think growing up in the LGBT community in the 80s and having my mom and her partner both be activists, you know, I saw that there was an ugly side of Christianity, and I hated Christianity when I was growing up, because I remember marching in a gay pride parade, and I remember at the end of it, there are all these people holding up signs saying God hates you, and they were spraying water and urine on people. And my mom said, these are who Christians are, Caleb, and Christians hate gay people. Christians do not like people who are different from them. And so I grew up with this understanding that Christians were the enemy, Christians were bad. And when I think about that, and I think about, you know, today, there are a few things. Number one, I think that some people are afraid of the LGBT community, some Christians. I think that they think that the LGBT community is out to take their rights away. And here's what I say, Ro. I say, first of all, that's ridiculous, okay? The LGBT community is not out to take away the rights of people, okay? The extremists in that community are doing these things, but the majority of LGBT people that I know are either, you know, same-sex attracted, not doing anything about it, you know, they're still praying through it, they're confused, or they're in a relationship, but they want to live their lives, and they're not extremely political. They're as frustrated with this election as you and I are, you know, and they're not leading these big crusades politically. And so I think we need to be careful painting the whole community with a, you know, broad stroke brush, saying that's how these people are, because I don't know about you, there are several different Christians I wouldn't want to be compared with, right? Because I'm not extremist like that.
Yeah.
So I think there's been a fear of the LGBT community. I think there's been a lack of empathy, where we don't understand that there are some people who have same-sex attraction. And I'm not making an argument that people are born that way. I'm just saying that a lot of people I know have felt that way since they were young. And my point to them is, in this issue, I'm not interested in a birthright. I'm interested in a biblical worldview. There are a lot of things I feel, but what matters is what God says in his words. But at the same time, I think we need to have more empathy. I think that we need to understand that these are people who are hurting. They want to belong. They want to know that we are willing to walk with them. And I think there are a lot of reasons for a lack of goodness from Christians or kindness. I think that those are just some of them. And I think that, honestly, if I can be so bold, especially in the 80s and somewhat in the 90s, there was this, I think, fear-based preaching towards the gay community and other communities that the Christian community did not understand. And I'm not pointing fingers or faulting, but I think that we have really underestimated how much damage was done in the minds of people through the 70s and 80s and early 90s, as preachers would just lambast homosexuality from pulpits. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't address it. I preached on it before, because it's in God's word. But I think you know what I mean. There was a very political aspect to it, too. Does that make sense, what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's where we have kind of come out of. And I guess maybe using the word coming out is the there's a lot of challenges that we have to overcome, and we're going to work through some of those things in the moments ahead. Honored to have with us Caleb Kaltenbach, who is lead pastor at Discovery Church in Simi Valley, California. He's written a wonderful book called Messy Grace, and as we'll hear a bit more of his story, as the subtitle suggests, how a pastor with gay parents learned to love others without sacrificing conviction. And you'll hear Caleb's conviction as we go along. But we'll talk about how do we live in the tension between grace and truth. And we'll get some understanding about are there some common traits, some commonalities that we can find, and how do we maintain our strong convictions? but still be loving and grace-filled. All those things coming up in the moments ahead. We do have some copies of Caleb's book to give away. I know it would be an encouragement to you, or maybe someone that you know is maybe wrestling with some of these issues. We'd love to have you sign up for that. We do a drawing at the end of the hour. Also, it may be that you have a question you'd like to ask a pastor about, you know, how to deal with maybe someone who's in a made a life choice, in a gay life, and you want to just get some answers. You can join us with a question or comment. You can be anonymous if you prefer. Call us at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. Issues in Christianity that are as divisive as the acceptance of the LGBT community in the church. And today we're hearing from someone who was raised in that community. His mom was active. He marched in gay pride parades. His dad got into a same-sex relationship as well. He came to faith. We want him to tell his story. He's now a pastor. Caleb Kaltenbach and his wife Amy and their children live in Simi Valley, California. He's lead pastor at Discovery Church and has written this wonderful book called Messy Grace. And Caleb, maybe just to, you just touched on the story a little bit, but how did you come to faith growing up thinking that, you know, Christians hate gays, which sadly was not that far from the truth, was it?
No, it was not that far from the truth. And I think I did exactly what I just told our listeners not to. I painted all Christians with the broad brushstrokes of, hey, they're all hateful people who want you to look a certain way and talk a certain way and everything like that. So when I was in high school, my worldview was out of control, and really I didn't even have one. So I got invited by some friends to attend a high school Bible study led by a high schooler. And so I thought, this is my perfect opportunity. I'm going to go and I'm going to dismantle their faith. I'm going to pretend to be a Christian. I'm going to be a ninja Christian. And I'm going to go and I'm going to show up and I'm going to, you know, walk in. And I remember I had never owned a Bible before. So I grabbed one of my dad's old Bibles that, you know, he never really was reading. And I went and I had never stepped foot inside of a Christian household before, much less an evangelical household. And so first thing I noticed was, why are there framed pictures of sheep and lions and Bible verses and a shepherd kid? And I looked at my friend and I said, this is weird. I said, this is awkward. I said, if I turn Christian, do I have to get a sheep picture? Is that part of the deal? And I remember going down and we were supposed to be reading from 1 Corinthians. I was in 1 Chronicles and they realized real quick, I didn't even know there was a New Testament. I just, you know, when they said there was an old one, I said, so I guess there's updated 2.0, because I just had no clue. But the more that I learned about Jesus, here's what I learned, that Jesus had very deep theological convictions in his earthly ministry and his first coming. He had very deep expectations for how we should live our lives, and he still does, obviously. But Jesus also had very deep relationships with people who are far from God, which I guess is all of us, but specifically people that the religious culture and even the secular culture both ignored. And so I was like, man, I could get on board with that. And I came to the conclusion, studying scripture, that God defines intimacy as appropriate between a man and a woman in the first covenant that he created right after he created the world. So then a week later, I wanted to be a pastor. Mm-hmm. And I got baptized, and I didn't tell my parents. So you got to understand how a gay teenager would feel coming out to his conservative Christian parents. I was a 16-year-old teenager coming out as a Christian to my three gay parents, and they kicked me out and disowned me. But eventually they let me back in, but I just kept on reading and studying and learning, and I just learned that Jesus does have expectations for how we should live our lives, but he was not like the people on the street corners.
You talk about the importance of pursuit, looking at how Jesus, you know, didn't let the barriers or the labels or anything. You know, we've sadly been known maybe more for protest versus pursuit. Just say a bit about that. How we need to be changing maybe our approach.
Well, I think that I think that we have been about protests because there's been this sense in which if we're going to get things done, we have got to use the political realm and we've got to use our voices. And that's how we get things done. And here's what I believe. I believe that there is a kernel of truth to that, that if you think of the different domains of life, you know, vocation, community, personal, spiritual, family, personal, and even the different hills of society, like arts and entertainment and politics and law and so on and so forth, Christianity, faith, touches all of that. And we have to take stands in the public square. I mean, I'm a graduate of Talbot School of Theology, which is known for apologetics and philosophy of religion. So, I mean, I'm all about that. I really am. But at the same time, I think that we have taken so many stands on different issues that all of a sudden people don't know what really is an issue and what isn't. And so I think especially when it comes to people, we need to be careful about how we take stands, how that's interpreted. You know, and I do think we need to take stands, but we need to be very careful on what we take stands for, and specifically about people who identify as LGBT. As I said at the beginning of the show, we need to think deeper about them. Okay, everybody is really a mosaic of their upbringing, their experiences, their pains, their hurts, their joys, their hopes, their dreams, their longings. I mean, all of us are just one beautiful, messy mosaic that God has united together to glorify himself. And so when I look at a person, and if they identify themselves as LGBT or an addict or a workaholic or whatever you say, there's a lot more beneath the surface that is driving that. And I want to think deeper about them and not just categorize them or label them as one of those people. And so I think the more that we really think deeper about people and get to the heart of the matter, much like Jesus did with the woman at the well in John 4, the more that we follow his example, the better off we'll be.
You, in fact, in the book Messy Grace, you talked about, you know, there's some common ground with the LGBT community, that there are some common traits. And maybe just say a bit more about that here before our break.
Yeah, I think that we need to realize that we have more common ground that we can work with when it comes to loving and building bridges with the LGBT than community than what we realize. We both communities are creative. Both communities have sense of justice. They're committed to their cause. You know, they have events focused on their cause. They defend what they believe, committed to doing community and life together. They're unashamed to be recognized for what they believe. They're passionate about wanting people to see where they're coming from. We have our own books, movies, TV shows, music, so on and so forth. And so we have so much common ground in which to build from. And I think that when we look at a bridge as something to be walked over and not burned, and looking for that common ground, just like Jesus did, just like Paul did when he engaged the philosophers in Acts 17. He didn't just start waving the finger at them. He met them where their culture was and brought out the gospel. I think it's going to be better.
Cale Kaltenbach has authored the book called Messy Grace, How a Pastor with Gay Parents Learned to Love Others Without Sacrificing Conviction. I think as we continue our conversation, you'll get a good sense of that and hopefully help understand maybe more effectively how to live in the tension between grace and truth. We'll talk about it. Caleb and his wife Amy and their children live in Simi Valley, California. He's a lead pastor at Discovery Church and speaks widely on faith, reconciliation, and sexual diversity to people on all sides of the LGBT issue. He's joining us today. We do have some copies of his book to give away, and we welcome you to sign up for that. We'll do a drawing at the end of the hour, 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484. Also welcome you to join the conversation. Maybe you have a question or a concern or would just like to get a pastor's perspective, someone who's lived in the world a bit more than maybe you or I have and has some great insight. You can join us with a call at 877-93-FAITH.
Father's love for us, how vast beyond all measure, that he should give his only son and make a wretch his treasure.
Talking today with Caleb Kaltenbach. Caleb is the lead pastor at Discovery Church in Simi Valley, California, and he's written a powerful book called Messy Grace. And the subtitle is, it's basically his story and important teaching on this subject that is, so, I guess, concerning for many of us, divisive, if nothing else. The subtitle is How a Pastor with Gay Parents Learned to Love Others Without Sacrificing Conviction. Caleb became a believer in his teens, had a mother in a 20-plus-year relationship, and a father that ended up in a gay lifestyle as well, or I guess not using the word lifestyle, life choice. So I'm going to have to work on that. Wondering, one of our listeners had called and just asked about, the phrase, love the sinner, hate the sin. Wondering if that's good or bad to use that when debating the issue of homosexuality.
I don't like that at all. I don't like it because, and I don't think that anybody means anything by that. Let me just say that, okay? But I can tell you from being on the side of my mom's community and hearing that all the time, in their eyes, you're still calling them sin, and that's the way they look at it. And people in that community have been so used to shame. And, shame is different than guilt. Guilt is, when I say I feel bad for what I have done. Shame is I am bad. I am this and that. Now, I understand when it comes to accepting Christ, we do need to understand that we are sinners, that there's nothing we can do to earn our salvation, that we are unregenerate. I get that doctrine, and we need to lead people to that point. But when it comes to love the sin, hate the sinner, there's so much emotional baggage behind that, because number one, they don't look at what they're doing as sin, right? So for them, it's probably not sin, but for us, it is. And for us, we can't really separate the sinner and the sin in a perfect way. God can, because he's God. He can do anything, but we can't. That's why I like the phrase, there's a big difference between acceptance and approval. I think we're mandated by Scripture to accept anyone. And I think that's part of the Great Commission, right? I mean, Jesus says in Matthew 5:46, if you only love those who love you, what reward will you get? Only tax collectors can do that. He says in verse 47, if you only greet those who greet you, what reward will you get? Pagans do that. And so his greater point there is that love doesn't depend on the other person. Love depends on you. Take responsibility for love, like what Paul said in Romans 12:18. If at all possible, as much as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Peace depends on you, not them. And so when you think about acceptance and approval, we do accept anyone, but we don't approve of every life choice. I shake hands with people in my congregation every weekend, and I know that there are some who have made choices that I wouldn't approve of. There are people there who have not yet beat their drug addiction. There are people there who are addicted to porn, so on and so forth. I don't approve of that life choice, but that doesn't mean that I don't accept them as a person. That doesn't mean that I wouldn't have them over at my house. And so I think the whole phrase, I accept you, but that doesn't mean that I approve of everything. I have my different theological convictions. I think that's a much better phrase. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And we're going to talk more about just kind of that living in that tension, having convictions while still being graceful. I know that in the book Messy Grace, you talk about Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount said, if someone wants your cloak, you give them, the second you turn the other cheek, you walk that second mile. But how does that sort of blend with, Jesus telling us you're salt, you're to be a preserving agent in culture? I think we get, you were in California at the time of Proposition 8. I think we're always sort of caught in that tension. Are we just trying to protect and preserve, or, do we just sort of let bygones be bygones? I think one of the quotes you talk about, some people say, well, let's just all get along and focus on bigger issues. Well, is that the right response as well?
Right. So here's the deal. I remember where that quote came from. I remember hearing a certain preacher on YouTube in a couple different videos, and he was talking about gay marriage and homosexuality, and basically this individual said, hey, there are bigger issues we're facing. And I understand what he's talking about. 64 people murdered in Chicago over the weekend, right? We have all these officer and African-American shootings. And I'm not placing blame or making a political statement when I say that. I'm just saying that we have horrible problems. We have ISIS. We have all these things, okay? But when you look at the Roman Empire and you look at one of the reasons why they fell apart, it wasn't necessarily because of a lack of military strength. It was a breakdown of the morals and the characters and the integrity of which Rome was originally founded on. And in that sense, we see that happening today as we see things being shifted around and there's not objectivity. There's so much subjectivity. And I think about his statement, there are bigger issues to deal with. Well, not really, okay? If God does say that something is an issue, and this issue is interfering, it is redefining a covenant that God created and the institution of family, then I think that is a tremendously big issue because that opens the door for so much else. But I think about what Jesus said, you know, in Matthew 5, 38 through 48, which I think is really one of the toughest passages in the Bible. And, you know, he says, hey, you know, love your neighbor, you know, and pray for those who persecute you. He says, hey, if somebody forces you to go 1 mile, go with them too. And so people back then would have gasped when he said that because they would have known the historical context that a Roman soldier could force anybody to carry his heavy backpack for a mile. And they hated the Romans, right? The Romans were an occupying force led by a pagan, brutal dictator who was sexually immoral in so many ways and a pagan. This empire restricted their religion, imposed a tax that they looked at as illegal because they were an occupying force, but they imposed this tax. They were brutal. They raped their women. They killed people. They crucified people. Many of the people who heard Jesus say that would have had family members or friends who were killed or beaten or tortured or flogged by Romans. And yet here's what Jesus says. You know that soldier that represents the people that have killed your family members, that has broken down everything that you hold valuable? You know that? I want you to serve that individual. I want you to love that individual. That's the person that I want you to be for. And people would have gasped when that happened. And so I think about that, and I think about our time, and how much more would Jesus say, serve the people that you don't agree with. Run to the people that you have differences with. Allow the differences with other people to drive you to those people, not move you away. If Jesus told the people in the first century, be kind and loving and gracious to the Romans, if Peter said in 1 Peter 1 and 2, respect the emperor, endure trials, be kind in the face of suffering, how much more do you think Jesus would tell us to respond today if he was here in the flesh to respond to the LGBT community? You know what I mean? How much more? I think a lot more.
Which brings us to the question we started the show with, and we've gotten a caller here just a few minutes ago who says, my daughter is gay, and it's breaking our hearts. She's getting married in August. I've told her that I can't walk her down the aisle, and it's been really tough. Can you offer any advice for my wife and I?
Yeah, I just had somebody in my office yesterday talking about that very thing, not necessarily walking down the aisle, but talking about should I attend my son's gay wedding? So I get that all the time. And I mentioned kind of that in the book on the chapter on celibacy, and I talk about it. And basically the long and the short of it is I know strong Christians, everybody, if I were to say their names, which I'm not going to on air, nationally known who have done both. Some who have gone to gay weddings, even though they don't agree, they've gone to be an influence and to keep their relationship, and they've gone to be there as a light. You know, in their minds, you know, they think if Jesus went to Matthew 9's tax collector party, you know, why shouldn't I be able to go to this? I'm not participating. I'm attending. But then I know people who say, no, marriage is something I want to stand up for. Marriage is very strong. Marriage is a covenant God created. And I'm going to take this stand, but I'm going to let them know that I love them. I don't know that there's a right or wrong answer when it comes to that. But where it gets really murky and cloudy, here's what happens. It gets so murky and cloudy when it comes to your kids, right? Because now all of a sudden you have emotions attached to it that you don't necessarily have with your friends. And it's deeper emotion. And now you're thinking through scenarios and you're trying to figure out what is it that you should do. I mean, this is a big deal for our culture. And I think we have to be certain of what God is telling us to do. But specifically, when it comes to a father walking a daughter down the aisle, I can tell you that I would have a problem with that. I have a 7-year-old girl right now. I would have a problem with that. I would really struggle with that. I would lean towards no because I don't agree with it. But at the same time, you know, I can also understand where this is a decision she's going to make with or without me. She already knows where I stand on it. She has invited me to this and to be a part of, you know, this moment in her life. However much I don't agree with it, she's invited me to participate in this with her and to be with her. And so I think for the listener, I can't tell you what to do with that, because I can't tell you what to do with your kids. That's your daughter. That's your relationship. But I can tell you this, okay? You've got to think deep about this issue. And you've got to think in your mind, is my giving my daughter away, is that a theological statement? Is that me condoning this marriage? Or is that me walking alongside of her, knowing she's going to make this decision anyway, and still being right next to her? And honestly, I wish I had a black and white answer for it, but I don't. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, you offered some do's and don'ts in the book when someone comes out, and maybe it'd be worth just reviewing some of those, just in terms of maybe helping us with language or ways to approach conversations or to not close off relationships, which, of course, we so typically overreact and something like this.
Yeah. I think that some of the things that I tell people to do is, number one, when somebody comes out to you, I know it can be a big shock, and for some people it isn't, but don't look disappointed. Try to control your emotions in that moment. I understand that we can't always, but we need to try to control our emotion and our facial expression. Number two is don't get mad, because I don't know what comes from people getting mad. I don't know if that helps anything. You know, you're not going to change their mind. It's not a moment to get mad. It's a moment to empathize and to try to seek understanding of where that person is coming from, and understanding that a person coming out to you, they're trusting you and they're letting you in on a very personal part of their life. Even though you and I wouldn't agree with it, they still are doing that. Number three, I would say, don't throw out Bible verses. I mean, I know that's what we want to do. We want to throw out the big five, right? Leviticus 18 and 22. We want to throw out all these different, you know, verses, and, you know, we want to say this and that. And, you know, there's a time and a place for difficult conversations, but it's not in that moment. Okay, they already know what you believe. In that moment, it's a moment to listen. I'd say number four, don't compare. Don't say, well, I think your sin is really no different than theft or murder. And they're thinking, well, thanks a lot. You just compared me to Gordon Gekko and Hannibal Lecter. That's great. That's not the way I see it. And then I would also say number five, don't immediately try to get them counseling, saying, well, we'll get you in to see somebody. Because again, I think we all need counseling, but that's not a time to do that. I think that, you know, we should reaffirm our relationship with them and say things like, my love for you is not based on your sexuality. It's based on you. And this changes nothing about our relationship. And God loves you no matter what. And so do I. And I also think that we need to thank people as well. When you say, thank you for sharing this part of your life with me. Thank you for telling me more about you. You know, thank you for including me and, you know, for making me a part of this. And it's something that they trust you enough to include you, and you do, and we can do so much damage in that initial time. We need to be careful with that.
Another caller just wanted to be anonymous. He says he has two coworkers who are open about their lifestyle choices, and all those, he says, I don't agree with them. I'm still good friends with them. So this book sounds like a good resource that I could pass along. Can you give me advice on how I could pass along a book like this to them without offending them? Would that be offensive to get a book like this?
The book is for everyone, but I really think that this book should be read by a Christian first. And so I think that, because that's the primary audience, while it is for everyone, it is the primary audience. And this is not going to be a book that is going to change their mind, I don't think. This is really a book. There are a lot of books out there that deal with a defense of the faith or apologetic reasons for, you know, heterosexual marriage. They give a really good, sound exegetical, exegesis of passages. But I wrote my book to be more relational. So it's written for the Christian to be more relational towards, you know, people in their life that they love. So my advice would be, read the book first, and then after you read it, then I would try to make the decision if you could give it. I've had people give it to their LGBT friends and family members, and sometimes it goes well, but sometimes they look at it as an insult, as you're trying to change me. So I would say to read it first.
We'll take a quick break, come back with just some final comments with Caleb Kaltenbach, talking about his book, Messy Grace, How a Pastor with Gay Parents Learned to Love Others Without Sacrificing Conviction. And we do have some copies to give away. We'll do a drawing for that at the top of the hour, 877-933-2484.
In your past experience,
this is Amazing Grace.
Wrapping up our conversation with Caleb Kaltenbach, and honored that he has taken some time to share with us and really give some good words, some insight, and some encouragement. And Caleb, just maybe a final thought from you on how we, you know, if you have the opportunity when you speak on this issue, the one thing that, you know, we should take away so that we don't forget, and maybe start changing the way that we approach those in the community, and that we just, particularly maybe as family members, that we don't lose relationship over this.
Yeah, so I'd say a couple things. Number one, we need to remember that theological convictions should never be catalysts to treat someone less. That should never happen. That our theology should drive us to love people. But I also think that we need to think deeper about people. We need to understand that Jesus walked in grace and truth, as it says in John 1, 14 and 17. But we also need to understand that as we walk in this tension of grace and truth and think about people deeper, that we're going to realize something. For people who identify as LGBT, the issue is identity, not sexuality. I remember my mom told me, and I don't know how we got on the subject, but she said, you know, Caleb, in the last final, you know, years with Vera and I, you know, we were never intimate sexually. And so I looked at her and I said, well, you're not a lesbian anymore. She said, sure I am. That's my community. Those are my people. Those are people that I know. I have relationships there. I'm part of a cause and a movement. I said, well, you just described the church, Mom. Come to the church. And she said, no. Why would I go somewhere that would shame me and make me feel less about myself? And I realized that they weren't intimate for like 7 years or so, but they still identified as LGBT because for them, the greater point of identifying with that community was the relationships and the understanding. And so many Christians just focus so much on the intimacy level, which for most people who identify as LGBT, even in relationships, intimacy is not the greatest part of their relationship. It's other things. And so we automatically focus on the smallest part without getting to know them as a person, without getting to know what they're looking for and helping them to belong. And I do believe we need to have conversations on holy living. But I think that those are best had in the context of trust and relationship. And so let me show you how this went down. When I was in L.A. for 11 years at a church called Shepherd of the Hills, and a large church, and went to Dallas, Texas for 2010 and 2013 to go preach before returning back here in 2013. When I was at my church in Texas, both of my parents separately from one another moved down to Dallas to be close to our family. And then both of them started attending the church that I was preaching at, even though they knew what I believed, and I was shocked. And then 2 weeks before we left and moved back in the summer of 2013, both of them gave their lives to the Lord. And when I asked them what did it, what was the catalyst to help them hear Jesus, they said the biggest catalyst was people treated us like people, not like projects. They weren't trying to fix us. They pointed us to Jesus. They understood, and they understood that they needed to show us love, and that primed our heart to be able to hear the gospel. And neither one of them are in same-sex relationships. Neither one of them, you know, are planning to be in them. You know, they still are same-sex attracted, but they're focusing on God right now. And I think it comes from thinking deeper about people and loving them the way Jesus did.
Let's give us the grace to treat people like people, not projects, and to understand that, you know, we're all in need of God's grace and grateful for it. Messy Grace is the book title, How a Pastor with Gay Parents Learned to Love Others Without Sacrificing Conviction. It's from Waterbrook Caleb Kaltenbach, lead pastor at Discovery Church in Simi Valley, California. His wife, Amy, and their children live there, and he speaks regularly on these issues. Thank you for talking with us today. Caleb's been so encouraging, and blessings on your continued ministry.
Thank you so much for having me.
Caleb Kaltenbach joining us today on Connecting Faith. In a moment, we'll come back and give you some of our thoughts and takeaways here on Connecting Faith.
Can your past experiences help you connect with people? Leah Adams knows that they can. Hi, I'm Steve Douglas, and today on Making Your Life Count, Leah tells us how she connected with a young girl named Brittany.
One girl, very much a loner. A lot of the kids left her alone. So I would just often make sure I'd give her a hug and say hi and just ask her how her day was going and just show her love and just show her that I cared.
Growing up in the foster care system, Leah had always felt lonely. And that has given her a desire to touch the lives of those who feel left out.
Because I was always the one left out, my heart always went out to those kids that were sitting by themselves. I had to make it a point to go and sit down and know their name and let them know that I care.
Like Leah, why don't you be on the lookout for people who are lonely and hurting? God wants to use you to make a difference.
Steve Douglas with a reminder that, you know, we can use what God has taken us through to be an encouragement to others. And I love that thought. Just thought it fit in with our conversation today that, you know, there are maybe many that are struggling with sexual identity and are lonely and, you know, could just use a friend and use a hug. In fact, one of the things that Caleb didn't talk about, we didn't get to in today's program, was the importance of touch when relating to this community. And you know, that's, I don't know, Ted, what about takeaways for you? What sort of hit you in our conversation?
You know, early on, right at the start, where he talked about how he gets frustrated, or those like his mom, you know, was frustrated with those in the LGBT community that would be activists and be out there and kind of giving the community a bad name by being so militant. And then turning that and how that happens in the Christian community. I mean, I get so angry when I see those that claim to be Christians doing things in Jesus' name that are not the way Jesus would act and live. So that was pretty eye-opening for me.
Carissa, how about you? Thoughts, takeaways today?
Yeah, I think we have a real opportunity here to be the light of Christ. And there's a lot of people out there that are hurting. And the last thing that I think they need is for Christians to just cast judgment on them and try to stay away from their communities. Or I think that we can be a part of their communities by shining the light without agreeing with these lifestyle choices. Yeah. So there is a tension, and Jesus lived in it, and so should we.
Yeah, living in that tension between grace and truth. You know, it's easy to go one extreme or the other, and I thought his do's and don'ts are just very practical. I mean, we don't need to get mad, don't need Bible verses here. It's not about comparing, you know, and and even just to say, you know, thanks for sharing, thanks for being willing to talk about this, to keep some conversational.
I think we hesitate to do that because we think it's condoning, you know, but just saying thanks is not condoning. It's loving them where they're at.
He said there's a difference between acceptance and approval. Mm-hmm. Good words today from Caleb Kaltenbach. Hope that you were challenged by the program. Tomorrow on Connecting Faith, Joe Bender talking with Dr. Emerson Eggerich. Love Emerson Eggerich. He's, you know, talking about love and respect for many years. And he has a new book called Mother and Son, The Respect Effect. So, you know, moms and sons don't always get along so well.
Mm-hmm.
Sons and moms don't, you know, I can speak from experience about that.
Right.
So I'm going to have to listen in. So how do we apply a biblical principle of respect to strengthen our relationships with the mom and son? That's come up tomorrow.
Connecting forward to that. That's great. Hey, I'm enjoying this new format, Neil. Nice to talk with you and converse and just kind of process things and hear our listeners get in on it more, too. It's
We want to give you the opportunity as we go along as well, too, to give us some feedback. We want to make this program about takeaways because it is about connecting faith to life. By the way, I hope that you, if you've not connected with us on our phone app yet, you consider doing that, the Faith Radio Network. You can get that free phone app and take us with you wherever you go. And And make sure you sign up for the Live Free Challenge. This is the sign-up month. It gets underway in August, but it's an amazing opportunity for us to not only get fit, but to really partner with a great organization, International Justice Mission. So more on that's online at myfaithradio.com. Check it out today.